Today is the 6th of January, 2009. Feast of the Epiphany in the Christian and Catholic tradition. Just because we have Victoria hasn't been with us before. When we use the Vedic system here, yoga philosophy, and so our meditation on God, I mean, your meditation on God is whatever it is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, to say that out loud. But our focus is mainly on Radha and Krishna, because Radha and Krishna are manifestations of God in the sort of pure form of love. Krishna being the male aspect and Radha being the female aspect. No such thing as God, the male, without the female. So yeah, we'll see it as... So that's Radha and Krishna in the middle, and that's Lakshmi and Vishnu on the right. Same thing, really. Radha and Krishna is more the countryside. And Lakshmi and Vishnu is more city folk. It's more uptown.
Okay.
And that's also Lakshmi here, goddess of fortune, on the left. And then, of course, Ganesh. So that's the approach to things here. Epiphany is a... means what? Epiphany is...
showing?
Yeah, but epiphany is a big shift in consciousness. An epiphany is a bolt from the blue. It's a divine revelation, a realization. When, well, geez, I never thought about that before. I never saw that before. I never looked at it like that before. That's an epiphany. But not minor. That changes your... here you're going along, bang, you have an epiphany. Now you're off. Whole different direction. That's an epiphany. It's a major revelation. So I wish for all of you your own epiphany. Today and certainly through the year. I hope you have one or two before next epiphany. We don't get them that often, or they wouldn't be of such great significance. I mean, I wish that you had them every day, but I don't know that you could process them every day. You'd be overwhelmed. But who here has had an epiphany in their life? Show of hands.
No.
It's a major shift. It's a major understanding that comes all of a sudden. And you're never the same again, ever. Anybody? I'm talking spirit. Very good. So, the catalyst for the epiphany was the birth of the child. Anything can be a catalyst. Anything, anyone, you can't say, well, this is a catalyst, this is not. No. Could be anything. Of course you have. Waiting for you to catch up with that.
We didn't have a Weetabix.
She was eating Weetabix, that was the catalyst? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
That'd be a good ad for Weetabix. My first epiphany came at 19. That's when I had my first awakening, major one. And I never went back. They kept trying to get me to go back, but it didn't work. So today is the epiphany.
It doesn't have to be like the St. Paul and the Rosh Damascus.
Well, that was his epiphany.
Yeah, yeah. But there could be little ones.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, the little ones you call a realization, you know, a revelation. Epiphany is more.
It's a big shift.
It's a big one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's big. It's a big shift. It's not a small shift. You
For
know.
Me, I definitely would think it was when I started to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
I realized I wanted to do it.
Mm. Yeah, so you'd ask me a couple questions planetarily, what's happening. So Jupiter, we've talked about this already. Jupiter has moved into Capricorn for the year. And Jupiter's debilitated in Capricorn, so it makes it a bit weak. And it's with Rahu, because Rahu is in the sky. Rahu's like a shadow.
No, influence. Astrology.
Yeah, it's a north node of the moon. And, you know, he's a mischief maker. And Jupiter's finances and money and the economy. So, you know, it's no big revelation what's going on in the economy right now. And we've you know, I don't want to beat a dead pigeon here. Go over and over again. You know. Anyway, I was talking in relation to the planetary planner. Whenever you, just a few days ago, you saw Moon and Venus in the sky together. Did you see them in the evening sky? Very bright, very beautiful. They're over in this direction here. Yeah, they were from us. Yeah. Yeah. So when Moon is with Venus, that's a gold day. Yeah, just this past one. And when Moon is with Jupiter, you see, that's also a gold day. So you only have a possibility of gold days twice a month, effectively, right? But now, Jupiter has moved into Capricorn with Rahu. Okay? So, it's like Jupiter and Moon together would be a goal. It would be like a bowl of milk. But with Rahu would just be a couple drops of poison. Well, it's only a couple drops. Drink the milk. No. You see? So now it becomes a gray day for the rest of the year. You see? As long as Jupiter's with Rahu, we've lost the gold day. Because Rahu is like the drop of poison in the mixture. You follow me? So, from now until the end of... No, beginning of May, Jupiter's finished for a gold day. Done. Then for 3 months, he goes forward into Aquarius... And then we'll have some gold days. Then he goes backward motion back into Capricorn with Rahu. June, July is Aquarius. August, September, October, November, December. So the rest of the year. Again, we lose the gold days. So the gold days will only be when Moon and Venus are together this year. And as long as Venus is not beside Rahu... Or with K2, or with Saturn, or with Mars, which will make it all gray. So what I've added to this, you'll notice, is I've added, look at 1st of January, say gold, Moon, Venus. Oh yeah, you don't have it. Well, there's more there. So I thought I'd just add those so you can see why they are what they are.
Thank you.
See, 1st of January, it says gold, then it says Moon, Venus. Moon is with Venus. So then when you see, look up in the sky, you see them and you say, oh, that's Moon, Venus. Then take, for example, the 11th, Sunday. Bronze to gray at 8:07 in the morning because Moon goes with K2, becomes gray. Then I see all these grays.
Yeah.
Then on the 13th Tuesday, it moves into a different sign, but now it's with Saturn, Moon Saturn, still gray.
It's still gray.
Yeah. and then it goes to bronze. So that's how I've done it. I thought we'd just maybe offer a little bit more insight.
Just for Victoria, it's not necessarily a bad day for everyone, but if you're starting something or applying to something, and that's or buying a car, or you pick the better days rather than the bad days, it doesn't mean that all the great days are going to be shitty for everyone.
Well, yeah, but you don't want to do important things on great days. Like just like she said, bronze days are average days. They're okay, they're all right. But gray days, you're better to avoid them. You know, if you buy a printer for your computer on a gray day, guess what? Correct.
Yeah.
You're going to have problems with it.
Yeah.
Any kind of equipment that you're going to buy. Or it won't do what they say it's going to do, or something, you know. So you don't want to make major investments. I mean, we have to be practical, you know. We have to buy this and that and do what we have to do. But things that are very important for you and you have to use all the time, and you should just give it a little more thought.
Like getting married.
Like getting married is, yeah, that's a big one. That is a big one. Now, at the very bottom, note, Mercury will travel retrograde or backwards from January 11th until February 1st or January 31st. Okay, so we're just about to put that up onto the website. So January 11th to the 31st, it's retrograde. You're safe by the 1st. And when Mercury's retrograde, again, you can have problems with equipment, travel, communications, sometimes business transactions.
When is January 11th
again? It says right there.
Sunday.
Yeah. It's a Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, we had begun to read a few just the verses from the Bhagavad Purana, which is according to the Vedas a history of the pastimes of God, of an avatar of God on Earth about 5,000 years ago, and this is about Krishna's life and times, and about a lot of other persons as well, kings, sages, queens, warriors, realized souls, different personalities. A lot of interesting stories are in here. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om
Narayanam namaskritya naram chayav narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayamudirayat. Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, along with Balaram, his brother, played just like a human being, and so marked and so masked he performed many superhuman acts. Avatar means to do what? Avatara. Tara means travel. And Ava means down. To come down from a higher plane, a higher realm, down to earth. So sometimes Vishnu, God, will take different forms. Or sometimes he may empower a jiva. A jiva is an average living being, an average soul. on a mission to come down and do some things. But sometimes he comes himself. So Krishna and Balaram, the brothers, who are not Jiva Tattva, they are Vishnu Tattva. They're God energy, not human energy, or not the average soul energy. They came down, played like a human being. Even though he played like a human being, he performed superhuman acts. Now, when God does that, he doesn't do it to show off. He does it because there was a need involved. So he does things. His incarnation, too, was an immaculate conception. There are five means of conception, according to yoga philosophy. Five means of conceiving a child. Right? What are they? There's five. Any ideas? To write them down and practice more than one, right? I'm going to wage a guess. Most of you have only practiced one thus far, and there's four you're missing out on.
That's what I want.
Sexual intercourse. You heard of that one?
Yeah, we've heard of that.
Okay, that's the lowest one. Thought, mind. In other words, mind. Use of mind. Planting the seed with the thought.
Yeah.
Sight or glance. Word. Sound vibration. And.
Touch.
And that's it. Fine. Those are the five means of conceiving a child. Down here, where us humans hang out, we're kind of stuck on the one. Does that mean that the other ones wouldn't work down here? They would work. If you knew how to do it, you'd have to know how. Right? You'd have to have the ability. Just like you have to have the ovaries to have a baby physically. No ovaries, no baby. So you have to have the qualification. Right? So when Krishna took birth, he entered the heart of Vasudeva, his father. And he was transferred from the heart of his father into the heart of the mother through a loving glance. Into the heart, into the womb of the mother through a loving glance. And then he was born. Immediately after coming out of the womb, as the little baby, he became Vishnu, huge. He filled the whole room, his forearm form, and he said, "It's okay. I'll get you out of this one," because they were in prison. They'd been imprisoned by the Kamsa, the brother, because the prophecy said that the eighth child born of Devaki would be the death of her brother, Kamsa. So immediately what he did, he threw them in jail and he killed off the first six as soon as they were born. Smashed them on the stone. Because he was just that kind of a guy. And the seventh was Balaram. And the eighth was Krishna. So they didn't get them. So that is another form of immaculate conception. So they acted like human beings, kind of. Knowing well that the age of Kali has already begun, we are assembled here in this holy place to hear at great length the transcendental message of Godhead, and in this way perform sacrifice. This is text 21. These are the sages speaking. There's a whole very, very large group of sages gathered at a forest called Naimisharanya, which is a place in India. And they all gather to hear this story, or this history being spoken. And back in the previous age, Dwapara Yuga, which was the Bronze Age, because right now we're in the Iron Age, we're in Kali Yuga. This is right near the end of the Bronze Age. All the other ages, Gold Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, people had powerful memories. And things were not written down. Everything was retained. And since Kali Yuga began, guess what? As I've said time and time again, you can't even remember a phone number. You got to write it down. Wait, let me get a pen. So this was being spoken, and it was being absorbed and retained by all these sages. Nobody had pen and notebook, and nobody had a laptop. There was no internet.
Ethernet.
And this is one of the famous verses of the Bhagavatam right here. Tvang na sandarshito datra dustaram nistitirshatam kalam sattva haram pungsam karna dhara ivarnavam. The Sanskrit. Text 22. We think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship for those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. So this was, they're talking to the sage that's addressing them and is about to teach them. And they call him the captain of the ship. Text 23. Since Sri Krishna, the absolute truth, the master of all mystic powers, has departed for his own abode, please tell us to whom the religious principles have now gone for shelter. So this is right at the time that Krishna left the planet after he had carried out his lila, or activities, his pastimes. And the idea of an avatar coming down is always to protect virtue, to protect religious principles. When we say religious principles, we don't mean religion. We mean justice, fairness, morality,
Ethics,
protection of the citizens, these kinds of things. Recognition of the divine source of our being, these kinds of things. Okay, chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service, text 1. Ugrashrava, or Sutta Goswami, the son of Rama Harshan, being fully satisfied by the perfect questions of the Brahmins. Brahmins are priests or high-born souls. Thanked them and thus attempted to reply. Text 2. Srila Sutta Goswami said, let me offer my respects unto that great sage who can enter the hearts of all. His name is Shukadev. When he went away to take up the renounced order of life, or sannyas, leaving home without undergoing reformation by sacred thread or the ceremonies observed by the higher varnas, his father said, fearing separation from him, cried out, O my son, indeed, only the trees which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation echoed in response to the bereaved father. So what all that saying is, Shukadev, even at a young age, he was a liberated soul. What does that mean? He's not attached to the things that most of us are attached to in life. He doesn't need the kind of family and support system, and he doesn't need a bunch of things. And he doesn't need a house. He doesn't need any of that stuff. And they just they engage in yoga and meditation, and they wander from place to place, and they share their knowledge with others. So he was, I don't know how old he was rather young, and his father was still attached to him. So, please, oh my son, please don't go. Where are you going? You know, don't leave me. But he was very, very detached for a young man. Let me offer my respects unto him, Shuka, the spiritual master of all these sages, the son of Vyasadeva, who, out of his great compassion for those gross materialists who struggle to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement of Vedic knowledge after having personally assimilated it through his own experience or epiphany. So, the point of this book, this Purana, is not, and we've done many, many mantras over the course of time here to help you to realize various material goals that you might have, to increase your wealth, to fulfill your desires, to find yourself a mate, many things we've done. This book doesn't have much to do with that. This is really about the soul's highest good. And the highest good of the soul is to not take birth in another body again and yet again and again and again, like waves of the ocean. How many waves are there? That's so many births. So this is aimed at the highest goal, which is to get you out off the wheel of repeated birth and death. So it's the real, it's the lofty stuff. Before reciting this Purana, which is the very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead Narayan, unto Nara Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Sri Vyasadeva, the author. Kalindi and I were very fortunate. Was that our first trip together to India? We went to Badrinath, way, way up in the Himalayas. And we went to the place where Vyasadeva had his ashram. And he wrote this book there. And it's also the same place where Nara Narayan Rishi performed their spiritual practices. And then Ganesh had a spot right nearby, because Ganesh was the scribe for the Mahabharata. So we were there. It was 1 mile from the Tibetan border, way up in the northernmost part. And the roads are only open a few months out of the year. In the summer. Because in the winter they're closed, and if you're there, that's where you're staying.
See all these little tiny skating guys that are walking there?
There's many sadhus and sages and bubs. So we have a taxi. You know, we have a car, rental car, a taxi. It doesn't say taxi on it, but it's a taxi. An ambassador. Yeah, with our driver. We're in the back seat, so it's a 14-hour drive. Get up there on roads that drop off, 300, 400 feet. And the roads that are broken away and collapsed on the side, washed away by the... And you got these little sages, these little holy men, bare feet, just walking along the road. They got a stick with his little, his little tiffin, and maybe a blanket. That's it. Maybe a book inside, so they can read, and some japa mala, some chanting beads. And they're walking, they're going to Badrinath too. But they won't get there in 14 hours like we will. They will, it'll take, maybe 14 days. So this place was a magical place. It was a really, really powerful place. Very memorable. We were very fortunate to go there, I thought. It's one of those four Chardham, four sacred places in India. Okay.
When you go there, you feel like you're very close to nature.
Oh, because you're here in the middle of it, yeah. Okay. Before, we said that one. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna. And so, they are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Why did he say that? There are so many questions that are asked daily by us all. But they're usually relative questions about concerns, material concerns, and concerns connected to the body, which is temporary. I'm not saying they don't have their place. I'm not saying they're not important. But they're relative. But these questions are those which are capable of completely satisfying the self. Unless it touches the spirit, it doesn't satisfy the self. Everything in the material world suffers from the law of satiation. Thank you very much. I had enough. Oh, have some more to eat. No, thank you. Couldn't eat another bite. I thought you liked it. I love it. It's great. I can't eat another bite. That's the law of satiation. Whatever it is, I had enough. I'd like to go riding for a while, and then enough. Got to get off the horse now. Whatever it is, in the material world, it has a limit. But the self, the soul, is unlimited. There are no limits. What you can do. This is a photograph of Naimisharanya. You probably can't see it that well. The forest where they spoke, where they had this big gathering between the Dwapara and the Kali Yuga. And there's a picture of it. It looks like a calf. The supreme occupation, or dharma, for all humanity is that by which one can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. This is another very famous verse. Savai pungsang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahaituk yapratiyata yayatma suprasiddhati. That's this verse. The supreme occupation, or dharma, for all humanity is that by which people can attain to loving devotional service unto God. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. What does unmotivated mean? Man proposes, God disposes. Mostly, when we talk to God, we pray for stuff. I need one of these, I need two of those, can you help me with that? Can you save my butt on this one? And please make this stop, please make this start, whatever it might be. Very rarely do we enter into a loving, reciprocal relationship. Which is an interesting contradiction, because everybody here in the material world is craving love. Everybody's looking for love. So, and that's fine. But the problem is, even if we find a wonderful love, lover, spouse, whomever, and then we suffer death. And it comes to an end. Yet, a loving relationship with God is by definition eternal in nature. And it gets carried through life after lifetime, or ultimately till you finish taking birth. So that's what can completely satisfy the self. So it has to be unmotivated. It's very difficult to get to that stage of what's in it for me stage, and getting beyond that. Okay, this is what you want. Okay, I can do that for you. Now, what's in it for me? You know, so that's selfless love, or unmotivated and uninterrupted. Steady. One must be steady.
Is it possible in this body?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. You have to understand that the mind, the moon is the mind. The mind is the moon. The moon has no light of its own. The moon reflects light of the sun. The sun is the soul, the divine soul. It is the symbolic of soul, of enlightenment. When the moon is in the bright fortnight, the 2 weeks of the waxing moon, it day by day reflects more and more and more light of the sun. It gets larger and larger until the full moon, when it's fully reflecting the light of the sun. So this is symbolic of the mind reflecting spirit. And the more the mind reflects spirit, the more one becomes spiritual. It's logical. What's with the peanut gallery out here? Then, in the dark fortnight, the 2 weeks of the waning moon, then the moon, the mind, begins to reflect earth. The material nature, what goes on down here on earth. Material things, material concerns, material cares. It becomes darker, darker, darker. Because it's not being purified, and it's not reflecting pure light. And it's not acting in that pure spiritual mode. So that's why the moon is that reflective surface. So yes, it's possible to do it down here, depending on how you use the mind. That's a good analogy for that. So in other words, we'd have to be in the waxing fortnight constantly. You know, we should be the full moon all the time.
Drew, I don't know what exactly it is, because I think a lot of people are now looking for that fulfillment outside wealth.
Well, yeah, I mean,
asking questions.
Yeah, well, that's what's happening now. Yeah. That's exactly what's happening. See, Jupiter in the sky now is debilitated. Jupiter is faith and belief. So now, the faith and belief in all the Celtic tiger and all this success and all this good fortune and materialism, it's the bubble's been burst. Okay, now what? You know, Is it fear and terror, or is it, okay, well, that, we took that way to that extreme. Now let's pull it back and let's find some balance. So anything that you put faith and belief in the material world, must be tested. We said this over and over again. Has to be tested. So their faith and belief in the real estate market, in a high-paying job, in the value of their home, you know, in how many customers are going to come into their shop, all of this is being tested now. Yeah, well, you know, again. And you know, the other thing that people sort of don't see for some reason, I don't know why, there's always an ebb and flow. There's no such thing as full on anything for, you know, interminably. This goes for a while and then it recedes. Then something goes for a while, then it recedes. It's always like this. You can't always be making money. Sometimes, you know, what's it say in the Bible? To everything there's a season.
Well, there is like a generation who's never seen this. I know my children came out through good times and it got better and better and better. So they've never really known anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's suddenly, you know, it's, this is all new for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So it gives us a better balance and a more realistic understanding. Because you can't, I don't care who you are, very rarely do people always ride high on the hog, remain on the pig's back, as you say here in Ireland. So it's a chance to rethink your values. And what's important in your life.
I think it's been good though for a lot of people. I think it's been positive. I'm just really surprised. There's some people that wouldn't even talk to me or entertain this kind of, you know, belief or even be open to it, asking me questions now.
Yeah, because when things are good,
so you'd be getting calls, Drew.
people don't need God, and they don't need spirituality, and they don't need yoga, and they don't need meditation. When they're making money, most of them don't need it. Oh no, I don't need that. Everything's good. Everything's fine. I'm doing well. Now it isn't fine and it isn't good. Oh, well, tell me about this yoga business now and
even
meditation.
The ones that are good for. That's what I'm still surprised. But you know.
Well, because the whole atmosphere is probably. Impelling them to be a little more thoughtful.
Yeah, look more inward.
You know, this is going to be arguably the biggest recession ever.
Wow.
You know, that I think that we're going to see in our lifetime. It's the biggest one in my lifetime. I missed the one in 1929. I missed that one.
By years?
Yeah, just by a year or so. Just by a donkey's hair. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Causeless knowledge and detachment. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yad Ahitukam. Vairagyam means detachment, the ability to let go. Can you love? You can love, but you can't be attached. Jnanam Cha Yad Ahitukam, so causeless knowledge. This is, who talks in terms of cause? Let me tell you about some causeless knowledge. No one uses those kinds of words. You know, let me tell you something real interesting. You might say that. Hey, did you know that? And they'll tell you something, right? Now let me give you some causeless knowledge. It means it's way beyond anything that you can conceive of. It has no cause that you can trace it back to. So it's coming from some other place. I always like that word causeless, because that's got to be something to do with God, because I don't know any humans. The occupational activities a person performs according to their own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the Godhead. Ooh. Your activities are only so much useless labor if they don't lead you to want to hear and know about God. What activities could lead you to want to hear and know about God? Well, pretty much anything. Why not? You can't say that. I mean, some might be better than others, but we talked earlier about epiphany. You know, some people can have babies and have epiphany. It could be anything. Anything can connect you. All right.
Something usually triggers it.
Yeah, but it doesn't always have to be some sort of lofty spiritual thing, you know. It can be something connected directly to material world. But then it takes you to another place, or it shifts your perspective.
So it could be even pain.
Oh yeah.
It's a painful experience.
Well, generally that's when more often than not when people turn to God. You know, when do atheists become theists? At the point of death. God, I'm sorry, I was just kidding. What's the joke? Somebody sent me a joke about an atheist. He's walking through the forest and he's appreciating the natural beauty of nature. And but, you know, look how beautiful nature is, and has nothing whatsoever to do with God. It all takes place through natural selection and reproduction and you know, just these kinds of things, you know. And then all of a sudden the bear comes, and the bear starts chasing him, and he runs through the forest. And finally the bear catches him, pounces down like this. He's just hovering over him like that. He's about to... Yeah. And the guy says, God, 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 if you exist, please convert this bear to... convert him to a Christian. Turn him into a Christian. Please, if you exist, turn this bear into a Christian. And all of a sudden, that was it. He stopped. The bear stopped in mid-flight, ready to swoop this guy. And everything went silent, and he said this prayer. And then the birds started, nature started coming back to life. And the bear said, bless us, O Lord, for these thy gifts which we are about to receive from thy bounty. Praise our Lord. Amen. Said his prayer and ate the guy. Yeah, I like that one. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. So this is very, very lofty.
Can you go over that
then? I will. All occupational engagements are ultimately meant for sense, for liberation. Whatever you do, It's meant to lead you to liberating the soul from repeated birth and death. If what you do, it's meant to disentangle you. Work done in the material world creates karma. Karma means action has a reaction. If it's a good action, you have a good reaction, you come back, you enjoy. If it's a bad action, it has a negative reaction, you come back, you suffer. So that's why we have some of both. So the best action, all occupational duties, whatever you do, should lead you to liberation, ultimately, beyond karma, beyond action and reaction, positive or negative. That's what he's saying there. And your action should never be performed for material gain. Well, it's not to say that you shouldn't do work in order to sustain yourself. That's not what that means. But your work shouldn't simply be for that alone. According to the sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. That means somebody who's actually doing very, you know, practicing yoga. And that's what they do. You know, in other words, an elevated soul. If from that some material gain comes, he shouldn't be using that money just to enjoy himself. In other words, he's doing a spiritual program and he gets some money from it. He shouldn't use that money to entangle himself further in karma, in action and reaction. You see? You understand that?
Yeah, I just remembered, I read something about some company, some transport company in the States, and you know, they were out to make money, and then things started going badly, and they changed their attitude to wanting to create a good service for the city that they were in. And in doing that, it turned about,
yeah,
that their you know, their profits went up, but it was that they came at it from an attitude of service, and then
right,
they flowed, whereas going at it to make the money,
yeah,
went the other way.
Exactly.
That's a good example.
That's what this whole Wall Street investment stuff is, driven by greed and fear. Most of these people, it has nothing to do whatsoever with providing a service. It's how much money can I make and how fast can I make it. No service. There's no real service being rendered.
And no loyalty.
Yeah, well, there's nothing for it that's benefiting the people. You know, they say, these brokers try to tell you that, okay, now I'm going to put you in careful investments. It's all nonsense. All they're trying to do is get you to go along with whatever they can make money on. Some guy who was a broker, very successful on Wall Street, made millions. Wrote a whole book on it. You know, there's none of this integrity there. So what you're seeing with this crash of Wall Street and these brokerage houses, you're seeing their karma catch up to them. Exactly what you're saying about this company. That's what's happening. It's all these greed mongers driven by what benefit are they actually doing for society? They're not. What goods and services? What?
The banks. They've been questioning, you know, how banks are making money, taking money from somebody and, you know, and loaning it to someone else and then getting more.
Well, the AIB was convicted of fraud in their foreign exchange department. Did you take your money out of AIB? No. Proven. They're fraudsters. Biggest bank in Ireland. Okay, one more. Life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. Well, wholly and solely, anyway. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation. since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Like I said, this is a pretty lofty philosophy. So we're not saying that sense gratification is a bad idea. It's just that if spirituality is not at the center of your life, then you're creating reaction. You're creating karma for yourself. Some of it good, some of it bad. You may say, well, what's wrong with creating good karma? What's wrong with it is you must come back to enjoy it. And like we said, this book is all about getting you out. Material world is the prison. We're all in the prison. How do we know we're in the prison? Birth, death, old age, disease. Prison life. You just haven't seen clearly those stripes you're wearing.
The chains.
So how do we get out of prison? You know, how do we get to get out of jail free card? That's what this book's all about, getting you out of jail. We're going to make a break from Mountjoy. So, there you have it. Now, before we meditate, does anybody have any stories or experiences or anything they would like to share with our group? Anybody? Mantram?
I always forget when I think about it. Yeah.
Did we hear any good ones? Antonio wanted to bring... Pardon?
5 cents.
What?
I find 5 cents at a filling station.
Found 5 cents.
Yeah. And I pick it up.
Very good.
Gillian won 10 grand. She busted her house.
Mm-hmm. Busted her house and
won
ten grand on Saturday.
Yeah.
On Saturday.
She followed Marcus's suggestion. Won 10 grand.
Lotto.
Also,
played the lotto.
But you have to play. You have to be in to win.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't hear me recommending people to play the lotto, but.
There you go.
Well, I had just had, you know, something that comes back to me while I was away, and it was, there was an awful lot of snow, feet of it.
Where were
you? In Canada.
Oh, in Ontario.
Yeah. And, on our last day when we were leaving the farmhouse we were in, there was a drive out, and just as we were coming out this way, turning around, the car just went that sideways.
Yeah.
And we went, and there was a drop down to the field, you know, and it was Grania's fiance who was driving. And we were in the back, and the thing was totally laden down. And of course, my first reaction, will we get out? And Grania just said, no, stay where you are for the moment. And I just called on Archangel Michael, you know, I just said, okay, please help us, you know, and I really meant it, you know, and he tried it, and the wheel just went, zzzz, and the next minute he tried it, and it reversed back, you know, but it could have gone, you know, it was...
For the other side, yeah.
Yeah, that was...
There was another Archangel Michael one, happened to my sister, and her and I were having we were been talking about my mom who needs some help, guidance. So we were all just saying, we're just going to put it out there that it can just all rectify itself and no one will have to meddle with it and just leave it be. So Renee was driving back home to Galway, and she'd been on the phone to me maybe 20 minutes beforehand. And she got to a junction in a town and she was waiting for this guy to move. He wouldn't move. And so he pulled up beside her and he said, if I take this road, will it take me to Athlone? And she said, yeah, it's much better, so go that way. He says, hold on, I have something for you. So he rummages around in his car and pulls out two cards with Archangel Michael on it. And on it it says, Archangel Michael, intercede for us. And then the whole prayer to go along with it. And it was exactly like 20 minutes after it's supposed to turn in. It's pretty cool. called quick response.
Yeah. It's a quick response unit. It was on the road that day.
Yeah.
All right, let's meditate. Close your eyes. Breathe, relax, and let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe and let go. Deeply relax. High above, envision a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light coming down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms and legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Breathe, relax. And let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. Relax and let go. All right. You're outdoors somewhere. And ahead of you, in front of you, some distance, is something in your life that you need to get over. You need to conquer. You need to release or neutralize. And it is in the form of a person. It doesn't have to be a person in your life. It could be one of your qualities or your behaviors or an attitude. But it's taken the form of a person. Let us approach this person and find out what is it that this person represents in your life. Do they represent a relationship with somebody? Do they represent anger? Do they represent fear in your life? It could be anything. What is the problem? What needs to be changed? Let's have a conversation with this personification of the problem. Ask his or her advice. What do you need to do? What do you need to change? What needs to happen? What do they tell you? How do you feel about what they've said? Do you agree? Are they telling you the truth? Is that the way it is? Are you willing to make the change? Are you willing to do what is required to change? All right, now, thank this person for their appearance, for showing you what you needed to see. Let them fade away. Clear your mind. And I want you to see into your future now. Let us go 1 year into the future. January 2010. See yourself. This difficulty or problem or challenge, how has it changed? Has it changed? Did you make any progress? What's different? How do you feel about it? All right. Continue until you're complete. And when you are finished, return now to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. And you can open your eyes whenever you're ready. Anybody?
My is fear as well. But if I'm kind of fearful of a situation because I didn't want to upset people, what I usually do is walk away. I never really settle out the situation. So I just always walk away. And what I, in the meditation, I said that I wanted to confront that. I wanted to work things out. If they're not working, instead of walking away, you know, that I would certainly, I want to see the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And after a year, I came out kind of like stronger. I see myself, you know, being happier and actually stronger. But I have done, you know, the work. If you get me. Let's say, for example, someone owe me money. And I've asked them a few times, they didn't pay. I usually just leave it. And I do that a lot. And I would avoid them just because I've been hurt. And because, you know, even if I see them, I would expect them to offer it. I wouldn't ask. Because I didn't want to upset them. I don't know what I get, I don't know what it comes about. I do have that. And so that is what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it came out in the meditation.
And?
Yeah, you know.
A year later?
A year later, I was, you know, I felt stronger and happier.
Yeah, see, you may need to do that for the sake of your own integrity. It's nice to be thoughtful and kind, thoughtful of others' feelings. But the flip side of that is you're enabling these people in their irresponsible behavior. You're making it okay. So, if they got away with it with you, well, I can get away with it with this person, I can get away with that person, I should be able to just get away with it. In which case, I can just keep doing it. because I'm getting away with it. So you may be doing them a favor in confronting them, not out of unkindness, but with the truth that they're not owning up to. You may not want to do that, but it sounds like, according to your meditation, that's what you need to do, yeah. Because it puts you more in your own integrity.
But if you actually, yeah,
and it strengthened you, so that must mean that the way you've been doing it is actually weakening you.
Correct, yeah.
So how can that be good for you?
Well, now I see it.
And, you know, in Ireland, by nature, as we've said, I have said on more than one occasion, people tend to not confront things. They tend to sweep it under the carpet, and they don't even, they can, it could be just absolute terrible circumstances, and they'll all pretend that everything's fine when they see each other. Myself, I can't do that. It's not wired for it, you know. And I don't think, you know, it's one thing to be considerate, and there's a time and a place, but, you know, if it's eating away at you, if it's something that's actually eating away at you, you know, that's what brings on diseases, cancers and heart disease and different things. It's things that are carried for years and years and years like that. Anyone else?
I found it very hard to get into it. But I got into it a bit then, and again it was fear, and fear of really expressing who I am. And when I, you know, with the dialogue, it was coming from the whole Catholic upbringing of, you know, being unworthy and being all of that stuff, you know, that's put on us here. And then a year from now, it's like straight away I could see a shining light. And also the around communication, it was like I would confront things, but I can confront them or something in a way, especially as you say in our society here, that, you know, people don't generally, and so I would be questioning things a bit, and it's about using different language to do it. It was finding another language, if you like, and I know where I'm going, like with NBC, non-violent communication, which is something that I'm looking at the moment, and I want to.
Another point worth mentioning is, if you swallow some frustration or anger, and you keep swallowing it, then when finally it does come out, it's liable to come out like a volcano, because it's so much bottled up energy. You know, the longer you hold it, the worse it gets. So you're better off addressing it sooner rather than later. And you know, the longer you hold something, you know, needs to be shown the light of day, the harder and harder it gets for you to want to say something. It's just it gets bigger and bigger and bigger in your mind. You know. All right. Thank you. I'm Ted Sed. I've been up since 2:30 in the morning. No, I wasn't dancing.